Good evening. I would like to warmly welcome you all to Earthbound Knowledge, co-producing a curriculum for the Anthropocene. After 7 intense days, the Anthropocene campus draws to an end, and we want to close the campus with a public event to open the unfolding of the campus as a resonating body for Anthropocene-related issues on knowing and learning to an interested public. Tonight and tomorrow, we want to put our focus one more time on knowledge forms and driving themes that inform the drafting of a curriculum for the future, and one in which earthbound knowledge is inscribed. We want to reflect and debate on the experiences within the campus experiments during the last week, questions concerning conceptual foci, relevance, methodological approaches, and the conditions and dispositions that frame knowledge and its mediation. Tonight, we start with reflections upon the plurality of knowledge forms by asking what particular qualities do we invoke and what characteristics are we referring to when we speak about knowledge and its mediation. Tomorrow, we continue with a series of parallel hearings on key terms that we have identified during the curriculum's collective development in the course of the last two years, before and during the campus. Just a short outline of tonight's program. In a minute, we start with an introduction by Jürgen Renn. This will be followed by three parallel conversations that will address topics such as the institutional construction of certainties, the public organization of knowledge and its application, and the thoroughly responsible means of working with uncertainty. A subsequent open discussion will help to interconnect these individual debates and aims to bring them together to the task on hand, the co-production of a future curriculum. Before I hand over to Jürgen Renn, I just shortly want to introduce him. Jürgen Renn, he is director at the Max Planck Institute for the History of Science in Berlin. His research focuses on structural changes in system of knowledge, particularly in the natural sciences. The aim is to develop a theoretical understanding of the evolution of knowledge with its epistemic, social, and material implications from perspectives reaching beyond cultural boundaries. Jürgen Renn, please.
Dear friends and inhabitants of the Anthropocene, what is knowledge? There are clearly many different concepts of knowledge, and in the Anthropocene, we do need a plurality of knowledge forms. But we also need to connect them to each other as inhabitants of the Anthropocene. While this does not entail that we have to agree on one concept of knowledge, we have to be able to connect our concepts of knowledge to each other. And I understand this evening as an attempt to draw such connections between different concepts of knowledge. Our starting point is experience, including our experience of being in this one world. All knowledge is ultimately experiential knowledge. Or the other way around, knowledge is encoded experience. Knowledge has therefore structure, and that structure, or rather those structures, are not necessarily the same as the structures of the world. Knowledge is constructed. All beliefs may be knowledge. Knowledge belongs to living beings. Some knowledge belongs to humans. Knowledge is an important part of our action potential. My knowledge may help me to survive. Our knowledge may help us to survive. These are not necessarily the same kinds of knowledge. Knowledge is in constant flux because our experiences change and because, as I have said, knowledge is encoded experience. The structures of knowledge may therefore also change. But some experiences are almost the same for all of us. There is a geological layer of knowledge that is almost universal. There are solid, fluid, and air-like bodies. There is warm and cold. There is light. Heavy things fall down if they are not prevented from doing so. Some things, like fire, go up. Grain, vapor, ray. So much of the religions, the philosophies, and the scientific theories of this world make this intuitive knowledge accessible, drawing a part of their persuasive power from it. Knowledge is in constant flux, as I have said, because our experiences change, and they also change because we are acting in this world. Reflecting on our actions is an important source of knowledge. Such knowledge is no longer universal. It may be practical knowledge tied to our instruments and the purposes for which we use them, or theoretical knowledge tied to means that are being explored for their own sake. Knowledge has structures that are being filled by our experiences. But reflecting on our actions may also change the structures into which we fill our experiences. From ordering things, we may learn how to count them. From counting things, we may learn how to add them. From adding things, we may learn how to multiply them. And at some point, our knowledge comprises abstract numbers separated from the things to count, as well as elaborate mathematical schemes allowing us to quantify our experiences or to imagine a Platonic world of pure ideas. But where did this capacity come from? From reflections of our actions in this world. Actions are not functions. They are also not just intentions. They have a counterpart in the world on which they act that resists them. And they often use means, material means. These means may be very different. They may be a hammer or a telescope. They may be an image or a tune or a feather or an iPhone. The history of actions is the history of the traces they leave in the world, but also the history of the means they employ. They constitute the technosphere. But there is not just the technosphere. They are also the actions that have created it. They may have been forgotten or become subordinated to an ever more powerful and ever more autonomous technosphere. But remember, knowledge is an action potential. Knowledge may emerge from a reflection on the actions we perform. Knowledge coexists, co-evolves with the technosphere. We are not at the mercy of the technosphere. We have our knowledge. But where is our knowledge? In our souls, in our brains, in our nerves, in our hands, in our fingers, in our bodies. Maybe, but not only. Knowledge can be represented, externally represented. In our gestures, in our language, in our environments, in symbols, in images, in writings, in data. All embodiments have a right to be. Knowledge that is not embodied is no knowledge. In that sense, knowledge is never, never, never tacit knowledge. The one who is tacit speaks loudly. Representing knowledge is an action on which we can reflect. Reflections on actions may generate knowledge or transform knowledge structures. Articulating knowledge thus becomes an act of creating new knowledge. Representing knowledge makes it possible to communicate. Learning is the appropriation of new knowledge, of knowledge. The appropriation of knowledge is mediated by its external representations, a toy, a word, a book. The appropriation of knowledge transforms it. The individual knowledge structures resulting from it are never quite the same as the shared structures of knowledge from which it departed. Shared knowledge is also in constant flux. Knowledge may have spiritual and cognitive structures, living in our souls, brains, nerves, or hands. Knowledge also has material structures, such as the environments and niches, including our own body, into which it is embedded, or external representations such as language and writing. Knowledge has also social structures, such as the families, the workplaces, or the schools in which it is being produced, transmitted, and appropriated. These aspects, spiritual or cognitive, material and social, should not be reduced to each other, but considered as independent, irreducible dimensions of a human epistemic ecology. But there is also a knowledge economy. Knowledge is being produced, transmitted, controlled, and appropriated. Who owns the knowledge? Who owns its means of production? Who controls access to knowledge? What cognitive, material, and social structures are best suited to produce and make accessible the knowledge we need as inhabitants of the Anthropocene? What role does the knowledge economy play in the society at large? These are important questions for a political epistemology. Ideally, all knowledge should be open, public knowledge, enabling us to act, enabling us to survive. But knowledge will always be distributed, as it is tonight, as you will see in what follows. Knowledge evolves. Every process of knowledge transmission is also a process of knowledge transformation. This is because individual acts of appropriation always connect shared experiences with individual experiences. In this sense, knowledge always emerges as local knowledge. To which extent local knowledge becomes global knowledge depends on the prevailing knowledge economy. The knowledge economy is not independent from the economy at large. It is a societal subsystem, but it has its own dynamics and is not simply subordinated to the dominant economic and political processes. There is always an epistemic surplus in the knowledge economy beyond all of the limits it imposes. Whether it is large enough to save us from the failures of the Anthropocene is an open question. Maybe we have to change society in order to build a more suitable knowledge economy that will give us the knowledge we need. But in order to do so, we have to rely on the existing knowledge economy. Will it suffice as the basis for building new knowledge economies for the Anthropocene? We have to understand the evolution of knowledge. Knowledge is in flux. Science, art, and culture are domains in which we can explore knowledge not bound to specific purposes and less involved in the existing knowledge economy. We can explore knowledge for its own sake, but with an awareness of the world in which it is embedded. That awareness is important because knowledge evolves when confronted with new experiences, and in particular with new challenges, and questioning its existing structures. And knowledge evolves when it meets with limits. Science is about exploring the limits of our action potentials. The knowledge economy of the traditional sciences is organized around the disciplines and their limits, but most problems cannot be fitted into them. There are borderline problems challenging the existing knowledge economy. In the past, the great revolutions in science have taken their lead from such borderline problems, from overcoming their limits. The clash between mechanics and optics, for instance, has given rise to Einstein's theory of relativity. Today's borderline problems may trigger similarly profound transformations of knowledge. We do not know yet. But we have to create the epistemic niches in which they can be explored. The Anthropocene campus here at the Haus der Kulturen der Welt is such an epistemic niche. I would like to warmly thank all of those who have contributed to create this niche. Thank you for your attention.